Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdio Gavaza, and for today, we're getting a little bit into the vaccination. This is something that has popped up quite a bit in the last couple of weeks, and for today, we're looking specifically at the rate of vaccination in South Africa, what the rollout plan is, if any, and what that actually means in terms of practically getting South Africa to the desired two-thirds vaccination or herd immunity that is anticipated or that is planned by the government. And to help us to unpack, you know, these issues and where we're going, we're joined by Professor Alex Van den Heever, who is from the Wits School of Governance at the University of the Witwatersrand. Prof Alex, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine.
No, thank you so much, for joining us. I think a good place for us to start before getting into the nitty-gritties of the actual numbers and, you know, the rates and all of that, maybe getting a sense of your work at Wits University. I understand that you're the chair of the Social Security Systems Administration and Management Studies at Wits School of Governance. What's your interest when it comes to, you know, all of these vaccination issues?
So my background has been for many years an economist working in the field of health, so working on health economics and financing. But it also includes examining sort of governance frameworks, institutional designs, etc. I was part of putting together the regulator for medical schemes and creating that framework. Worked also on finances for the Gauteng Department of Health, and also been involved in comprehensive social security reform. So my background is very much in the sort of wider sphere of social security and social protection, and with a very specific emphasis on health economics and financing.
So I guess against that backdrop, because it certainly sounds like you have extensive experience, at least from a policy point of view, when it comes to helping things, and you know, you've got that economics understanding. So with that in mind, what do you make of the current state of South Africa's vaccine rollout strategy?
Well, it's clearly a very delayed strategy. And just to point out that there is no public strategy at this stage. What we have at this point is an expansion of a phase three trial for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which was already underway in South Africa. And it was a kind of a workaround to get the phase one of what would have been a strategy going, because government essentially dropped the ball on vaccine acquisition. So this was a way of kind of kicking off some sort of getting some people who are at risk of infection in a third wave, get them vaccinated. But that's not a rollout. So we're actually still awaiting the full details of a government rollout program, which would actually aim to vaccinate the entire population. But government basically didn't do the development work for a vaccine strategy in 2020. And really appears to have only started working on it from around about the 6th of January in 2021, after a lot of public pressure was put on government. And this is why we are kind of Johnny-come-lately to vaccine acquisition. We don't really have a complete ground game in place at this point. And why we just have silence for a while on the specifics of when we will get doses and who will access vaccines. So that's kind of the position we're in. But I do expect a vaccine rollout to begin in South Africa in due course. And government is under huge pressure to make that happen in 2021. But we will not vaccinate to herd immunity in 2021. I think that's now pretty clear.
Now, Prof, one of the things that's been quite apparent, like you're pointing out, is the fact that whatever rollout strategy doesn't seem to be existent in any way. And I think the question for a lot of people is, why is this the case? And, you know, I dare say that this is not just a South African problem, that governments and public authorities around the world seem to have just not been prepared for vaccine rollouts, including in the United States. Yet we all knew that at some point inoculations have to happen. We knew that all of these vaccines were in development. It was in the news almost every day where the trials were, and whether it was AstraZeneca, whether it was Johnson & Johnson, whatever it was, we were following all of these things. Surely, you know, behind the scenes, one would expect that policymakers around the world were all working on the most effective way to actually roll out these things.
So around the world, it's clearly been a bit of a shambolic start for the vaccination programs. And it is worth noting that this is a unique intervention in history. It has never been a strategy before to effectively vaccinate every single person globally. And also within any particular nation. So our vaccination programs are typically targeted at specific groups like children, very young children who will be given, their sort of shots right at the, you know, soon after birth. That type of, vaccination program is relatively small. And then there are other more limited vaccination programs and the annual flu vaccines, none of them at this scale. So this is unique, and therefore you would expect teething problems. Now, some countries are being heavily criticized within their countries for not getting their act together, and yet they are still making progress. But I think that criticism is to be expected because it is an emergency and people really expect their governments to perform, and there's been considerable unevenness. And a large part of this has been due to the way in which the vaccine acquisition has occurred between governments. Who took initiative and who didn't. So, for instance, the United States is currently well on the way to getting to over 200 million people vaccinated within 100 days, let's say, of Biden coming into office. That's a very significant achievement in the U.S. It's a relatively large population. So South Africa at this stage can be criticized for not yet having actually administered a single dose as part of a government-run vaccine strategy, as opposed to something that is just a workaround or an extension of an existing trial. So I think that there's a lot to criticize in South Africa. In other countries, people are just very heavily focused on their governments getting their act together because everybody's under pressure. And then there are a lot of countries where they just haven't got going and they've just got very, very weak governments. And I think that we will also expect to see.
And then, you know, coming back to South Africa before we, I guess, look back at some of the countries and what they've, you know, specifically done, as in the case of the U.S., while on the way to the 200 million, when it comes to South Africa, what do those numbers look like? If we're saying that the U.S. is likely going to reach that 200 million in the first 100 days of Joe Biden's presidency for South Africa, what are those numbers looking like? When could we, based on what's happening on the ground, when could we expect to reach the 40 million that is expected in South Africa?
So we've currently vaccinated about 207,000 people at this point as part of the phase 3A trial of Johnson & Johnson. And the current rate of vaccinations, if we had to look at that at this point, it takes about 17 years before we would reach herd immunity. So essentially, we can't really look at the rate of vaccinations from this expanded trial as the indicator of what we need to achieve to get to herd immunity. We need to get to well over 200,000 a day to get to effectively vaccinate the population timeously. But we're being held up. It's not just the rate of vaccination, which is the ground game. You've got to have the vaccination sites that are ready. That's one part of it. But you also need to actually have the vaccines available. And that has been one of the biggest problems we've got. We had the AstraZeneca vaccine, which was acquired in January, a million doses, but it was never administered. And there are all sorts of questions around why that is the case. But it looks like we're on target to get a significant amount of Johnson & Johnson vaccines for delivery over time during 2021. It's not clear what the timelines really are, but we will get about 11 million doses, which will assist in the phase two part of the complete phase one, but also substantially complete phase two of the vaccination rollout. But there's no sign yet, clear sign yet, of the ground game, the vaccination sites themselves that may be happening behind the scenes, but nothing has been made public. And then, but we also don't have complete clarity over the Pfizer vaccine, which has been promised, as well as the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. They have made public that the phase three of our rollout will only begin in November 2021 and complete by around about March 2022. Which is a bit of a disappointment. But I would say that it is not unfeasible to complete our vaccination process by mid-year in 2022. The only issue is that it would have been really preferable to have completed the process in 2021.
Prof, just so that we're on the same page, did you say that to get to herd immunity at current rates, it would take, did you say 7 years or 70 years?
17 years.
17 years. And I guess, you know, for those of us that are still doing the back of the napkin calculations right now, what is our current rate looking like?
Yeah, so it goes up and down. So it's sort of roughly about 7,000 a day, 7,000 doses administered per day. But it also depends on when they run out of those doses, because what's happened is with the trial Johnson and Johnson and doses, it depends very much on when they arrive in South Africa. So we might use up our doses and then so we have a few days in which there is nothing administered and then begin again when a new batch has arrived. So we're getting... it was intended that for this phase 3A Johnson & Johnson trial in South Africa, which would be partly effectively a workaround to get phase 1 going, would have available to it about 500,000 doses from Johnson & Johnson. So Johnson & Johnson at the moment is the most effective vaccine against certainly the South African variant of the virus in South Africa, and would be very, and only requires a single dose. So 500,000 doses vaccinates 500,000 people. But Pfizer, AstraZeneca, all of those other vaccines require two doses. So we will still be about about 700,000 doses short on our phase one, just on this phase 3A trial. So we do need these additional doses to arrive as part of the government agreement to complete phase one and to begin phase two. So that's currently where we stand. And the low rate of vaccination is purely related to the number of doses that are available to us and when they arrive. So they haven't really expanded beyond a few vaccination sites because they don't really have the doses to do so. Secondly, it's not actually a full-scale rollout, and the regulatory approval for the vaccine that we have at the moment, that we are administering at the moment, is only for a trial. It's not actually for general rollout. So we're actually also still awaiting regulatory approval for a general rollout. And there appears to be some holdups in finalizing all of those arrangements.
That actually sounds like there's a lot that the country still needs. There's a lot of hurdles, I guess, standing in the way for us to get to, you know, where we want to go. But I want to, you know, perhaps get us to take a step back, because one can't help thinking about, you know, something you touched on earlier on, which is procurement. And I'm now thinking about... and I guess you could give us your thoughts around what does, I guess, global supply dynamics when it comes to the vaccine and which parts of the world get to receive it, etc. What happens to those dynamics when places like the U.S., you know, reach their levels of herd immunity? Does it necessarily mean that for a U.S.-based company like Johnson & Johnson, their main their priority then shifts to exporting to the rest of the world because they've been able to vaccinate a significant portion of their population. Doesn't that then help, you know, maybe getting vaccines and doses to other parts of the world that require, you know, some of these vaccines, especially the Johnson & Johnson one, which has proven, you know, quite effective against the SA strain?
Yeah, so there are a number of unknowns around this. So first of all, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine was supported by the US government, and so and as part of the conditions for their support would have been to make sure that they get dedicated supplies. So a very significant number of doses that are produced from Johnson & Johnson will go to the US first before anywhere else. Now, this is potentially unfortunate because South Africa is also going to be supporting the production of Johnson & Johnson vaccines, with Aspen Pharmacare in Port Elizabeth producing about 300 million doses, or the final stages of the production process of 300 million doses of Johnson & Johnson. And the problem with that is that all 300 million doses that they will produce this year are dedicated for first 100 million doses for the United States and 200 million doses for the European Union. And only then, that is from South African production, only then will developing countries be considered with the next batch that is produced after the first 300 million. Now, that to me is concerning, although the negotiations at the moment for Johnson & Johnson do appear to be bearing fruit, and we will get some doses from them. But the question is, why aren't we getting our full complement from Johnson & Johnson, given that this is where we're producing a large part of it, and we will give basically everything away to the United States and Europe while we are producing it? So this, I think, is something that does definitely require clarity from government and from Aspen Pharmacare, because it appears we've kind of been left out of the arrangement. And government is basically quite passive in how it's dealing with this particular situation, or it appears so. Might not be the case. But we see that, for instance, in India, the Serum Institute, which was producing AstraZeneca, is there the Indian government has basically stopped the export of AstraZeneca to dedicate more supplies to dealing with its own surge at the moment. European Union has, for instance, taken action where it's got production taking place on the continent, that it would actually, as leverage in discussing the equitable spread of doses between Europe and the UK, was threatening to block exports to the UK in order to preserve doses for them. So you see countries getting involved where they are the site of production. But we see South Africa basically doing very little. So it would certainly not compromise the United States or Europe if we ended up getting some of the second half of this year's, the lion's significant share for South Africa. So I think this is one of the things that sort of raises questions. I mean, where are we? We should have even been getting this agreement in September 2020, but we don't appear to have a very clear vision of what's going forward at this point. But certainly we are in a good position. We should be in a good position to acquire significant doses that could take us all the way to herd immunity, predominantly from Johnson & Johnson. But the other problem in vaccines is the development of variants. So there's a question as to what would happen if a number of variants develop in certain countries that reduce the effectiveness of the vaccines that have been distributed to date. And the general feeling is that there will need to be booster shots potentially, but that's not of the existing supply of vaccines. That would be vaccines that have been adjusted to cater for variants and to improve effectiveness. So it might mean that many countries will still require the administration of booster shots, even though we will acquire significant levels or degrees of immunity from the existing vaccine. So I do think that supplies will free up internationally as we get into 2022. Our only problem is getting through 2021 expeditiously and getting out of a situation where our economy is being hampered by the threat of further waves of infection.
And you've just brought up the word that I was going to bring up next, which is, you know, waves of infection. You know, to say in all of this that we're talking about, whether the rollout plan, you know, ends up being implemented, you know, later on this year, as you said, being implemented or not, there's still the present danger of a third wave in the coming weeks. Do you think it's going to be as bad as people are sort of predicting it to be? Is it because our fingers are already burnt with the second wave? What do you make of, I guess, the idea of a third wave?
So I think that the extent of a third or fourth wave is difficult to assess at this point, because we have had two very severe waves, and there have been a lot more severe than would be suggested by the reported figures. So if you analyze the excess death information, around about 150,000 people have died due to COVID, not the 50,000 that is reported. And if you work back from that number using an infection fatality rate as a way of estimating the number of people who actually have been infected in South Africa, it could be round up anything from about sort of 10 to 17 million people, or even more, up to 20 million. And if that is the case, we actually have a lot of people who have some degree of immunity already, and that can impact on the severity of a subsequent wave. Now, we also need to note that the impacts have been different by province and different by city. So in the second wave, for instance, Gauteng benefited from the restrictions that have been implemented on the 27th of December, in that it cut short. It was very clear that this was quite a successful intervention on the 27th of December. And by about the sort of the 11th to the 13th of January, every single province faced a decline in transmission at pretty much the same point, suggesting that they're all affected by the same event, which is the restrictions introduced on the 27th of December, which targeted gatherings. Whereas the first set of restrictions that were introduced in for the first wave were a hodgepodge and were all over the place, and did not properly target the airborne nature of the infections and super spreading events. So this second round meant that some provinces benefited, and therefore there's still large susceptible populations in place. Eastern Cape had a devastating impact. According to these estimates, it would imply Eastern Cape had many, many infections, maybe up to 60% of the population. That may or may not be true. It may be less. We will see. But other provinces, still a lot less. But if the infection fatality rate of around about 0.8% applies, we still have the possibility of large surges in waves in Gauteng, in the Western Cape, to a lesser extent in KwaZulu-Natal, because they really got hit hard in the second wave. So I think it's uncertain, but what we're actually facing is a situation where natural infections are going to outrun the vaccination program. And we will actually be more naturally vaccinating the population. Unfortunately, what that brings with it is death.
Yes, that is quite an unfortunate reality that you're presenting there. And I guess because you are someone who deals, you know, with policy and an economist, how do you sort of envision the best way to deal with that potential third wave? Some people are talking about, you know, maybe moving the country back to level 2, level 3, maybe imposing alcohol restrictions again, you know, all of these various factors, because, you know, when making any type of policy, if you're President Cyril Ramaphosa, just to use the term that's been used over the last year, you know, saving lives and saving livelihoods, you have to balance, you know, all of those different factors. What do you think, you know, would be a good way to proceed on that front?
Yeah, so I would be considering, I see that under consideration, various more limited restrictions, because as it stands now, there's no indication of a third wave. And but the problem is that our reported information comes with a big delay, and that we're only starting, we will only start to see the infection data pick up. It's actually telling you or giving you a picture of what the position was about 3 weeks ago, not what it is today. So when you start to see a wave emerge, you're already 3 weeks into it, and you actually don't know the true extent of infections as of today. So so you can look at a number of precautionary restrictions targeted at gatherings, but not necessarily impactful on the economy. So I don't think that there's any it's not, it probably wasn't appropriate for a general alcohol ban in the last set of restrictions, but it was appropriate to close sort of shebeens, pubs and places like that, which were gathering late into the night and people drinking. But it's not the drink that causes the transmission. It's the gathering in an indoor setting. So I would say that we don't need to even go to that extent, but we do need to make sure that there are that large gatherings are properly restricted, and probably we could consider the curfew being temporarily imposed at a stricter level, but not a full range of restrictions in place, because it doesn't look as if it's merited at this point. But as a precaution to prevent those super spreading events that really drive an epidemic such as this, you just intervene sufficiently to at least mitigate those risks at this point, but only very limited at this point.
You know, one of the things is that I think it becomes a bit easy sometimes to sit and look at what's going on in South Africa and perhaps criticize the response and, you know, the current state of vaccinations and all of that. But before we end off, are there any things that, you know, South Africa can be commended for when it comes to its response to the pandemic, and then, you know, the subsequent procurement of vaccinations and actually starting to inoculate people, simply because surely, you know, how are we doing, you know, compared to some of our peers outside of what you already spoke about with the United States?
So I think that South Africa has scored about a D in running the program, which means that you get some things right. But the question is whether many of the things that you could have foreseen as part of your strategy were actually implemented properly and timeously. I think it was an incredibly difficult situation to manage, but I think we could have done a lot better. So I don't really regard this as a relative test between different countries, because every country is in a different position, as a different context. And our context is not the same as that of Northern Italy. They have different risks to manage for the same pandemic. But I think that we have done okay, so supposedly, but we're also, I find it very, very problematic that government is not properly providing the correct information on what's been happening with this epidemic. We do not have the inpatient information, but they are not correcting the estimates of infections, the estimates of deaths. They leave it at these very, very incorrect numbers that are reported. And that worries me, because it suggests that people are not really using proper information to make strategic decisions. So I am concerned about what government is doing. I don't think that they have done a terribly good job in every respect. I think they've still, the capability of the state has been sufficient to get stuff going. And I think they have to just be kept going. But large parts of the burden of dealing with this epidemic has been in the public health system, and in the private health system as well. And many people on the front lines have done brilliantly in a very, very difficult situation. And I think that's thanks to at least having a reasonably coherent health system in place and in position. But it hasn't been easy, and I think that they haven't been properly supported by government.
So that's been it with Professor Alex Vandenheuwe, who is from the Wits School of Governance, giving us some insight into South Africa's current state of vaccinations. He's quite specific in saying that the rollout isn't really in place yet, but he does give us some details, saying that on average, we're looking at around 7,000 vaccinations per day, and at that current rate, it would take South Africa about 17 years to get to reach that herd immunity level. That numbers really do need to be stepped up, you know, quite a bit to over 200,000 vaccinations a day to get us to, you know, where we want to be. So the reality that South Africans need to be comfortable with at this point is that herd immunity is not something that's going to be reached by the end of this year. And then I think the last one, just highlighting the fact that, you know, there are a couple of things that South Africa has been able to get right, both in the public and private health systems. But given the specific context that South Africa finds itself in, there's a lot of things that could have been done better and could still be done better going forward. So that's been it. Professor, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
This is Mudira's Tech.
A very fascinating and sobering discussion, and especially given the fact that the numbers that the professor brings to us, 17 years, guys, that is a long time to think about actually reaching that herd immunity that had initially been proposed to be done by the end of the year. But I guess this is yet another example of when people say that it's good, it's nice to have nicely laid out plans, but the execution of those plans is always just something else. And right now the proof is in the pudding, and we just hope that you know, over time the country will be able to step up its inoculations. Really keen to see whether the US is going to be able to reach that 200 million number by the time that Joe Biden gets to his 100 days. But even then, even by the end of their summer, which is the end of our winter, where will they be on their vaccination front? And how is that going to affect global, I guess, supply and economic considerations when it comes to vaccines being made available to other parts of the world, right? Because it really does seem as if, you know, once again, we find ourselves in a situation where developed countries are getting the first, the first taste, the first wave of vaccinations. They find themselves being the one with the money to buy and source these vaccinations, and, you know, have these plans in place, and, you know, be going all out. And then, you know, after some time, emerging market economies, you know, then, you know, bring up the rear. So we wait to see how all of that is going to happen. And then finally, the one that was very surprising is just hearing and understanding the arrangement that's actually happening between Aspen Pharmacare and Johnson & Johnson. To think that almost all of the vaccines that are being produced in South Africa will be, you know, for export leaving the country. One would think, you know, one actually sits and wonders who actually agreed to this, right? Because surely a portion of those vaccines should remain in the country, even if it's, let's say it's a tenth, right? If you're producing, yeah, even if it's just a tenth or half of them, whatever the number is, something, you know, should stay in the local economy. But like what Prof is saying, the negotiations seem to be getting, you know, a bit better. So we wait to see how all of that progresses. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.